Antiquity and my monstrosities, is the same kind of solid rock shell.
Whoa. the Huguenots. Why do they spread jam on both sides of the toast? These animals barefoot, meet the window, despite the drag. They refuse to drink black coffee and insist on a liberal health of cream and sugar. They sneak single servings of half past when foxes are not looking. They do this because they can't, because they don't care.
For 30 years in Paris, I had been dreaming about Peking without knowing it. In my imagination, I could still see the nation of the world, but I don't know in my childhood, without knowing
it. It
wasn't like
my moustache. My moustache is the moustache of Frédéric.
Yeah, well, we've only moved about a few hundred yards right now, so we could do this phone call, and we're actually going to try to reestablish a signal because we're on higher ground, but the police came by. We were trying to set up a shot where you could see the creek overflowing farther to the west, probably just about 200, maybe 100 yards where it was creeping out. There's a playground here that I'm going to show you once we get reestablished. It's behind the family housing complex. It is a lake almost. You can see the playground, but it's a lake with all the water that it's covering, what I'm assuming should be a sandbox. But the police came by. They said, you should leave. I'm not going to tell you what to do, but if I didn't have to be here, I wouldn't. And then about 30 seconds later, that same officer came back to me and said, the water's about to take the bridge. All this water you're seeing is coming from the creek, which is overflowing farther up. I would get out of here. So we've moved.
Here, I don't want to break down as much detail as I can. Right now, temperature below freezing. We're going to see those winds shift around and actually pump us up to +5 this afternoon. Then a cold front, sharp one, cuts through. It is very cold there. Also, some wet flurries late afternoon, so watch for those for your evening commute. And then the system roars in, interacts with this cold air. This is going to be a snow event. All those areas shaded in yellow on our winter storm watch. It's a future cast into motion. And you can see, we do get that shot of showers and wet flurries, but only briefly at 6 p.m. Clears off. There's the cool air. Here comes that system. Could get initially some kind of snow creeping in around 10, 11 a.m. And then gaps a bit. The heaviest snow will come in the evening, so late afternoon.
In order to
unfolding there through the day and the night, and we will bring you the very latest. Such an urgent situation.
Such an urgent situation. A lot of information coming in right now. So
you're watching a woman in the water, and that video she just
thank you for tuning in to Maple Leaf's Worldwide Weather Report. We'll be checking on the weather all over the world with Tim Tiger. First, Canada. How's the weather?
Thank you. see how the water is rushing so hard it undermines the road surfaces and then carves out below them 3 to 5 to 10 feet of ground. This is incredible amounts of water because you've got to understand that this part of the area is right on the edge of the foothills. So all the rain that's been raining in the mountains is rushing right down into those small rivers, creeks, and streams. And you're getting pictures like this. Those rainfall totals are sometimes coming up with almost half a year's rain in just a matter of hours. And that number right here, the forecasting number, is 10 inches of rain in 4 hours. And I'm Gordon Sandell is right in the middle of it all. And this is going
It's the sunshine, but in truth, Florida is far more popular for the insanity of its inhabitants, for its warm sunlit beaches. But even if you aren't from the U.S., you've heard your fair share of insane
a very similar pattern that you find in the structure of societies, in the structure of companies, and in the structure of computers. And all
here in Boulder, we've had a whole round of new evacuations, and take a look at this, a whole lot of new water, at least 6 inches to a foot where I'm standing now. And you can see behind me, people have just abandoned their cars in the water, which is still rising to dangerous levels.
And this is going to happen across all institutions. Structure of societies, in the structure of companies, and in the structure of computers. And all three are moving in the same direction. That is, away from a top-down structure of a central command system, giving the system instructions on how to behave, towards a system that is parallel, that is flat, which is web, and which change and resources. And this is going to happen across all institutions and technologies. It's the way they work.
required individuals to ask for a drop. But when Daniel Taylor points for a straw in the private bar, he moves for a race when discovered there were none at the employee's weapon. Drops on the table, spot, unwrapped, but sure, I'm happy to take a look at the first time. I'm happy to take a look at the first time. I'm happy to take a
Purple kettle.
Which one?
One. This one.
That one.
Purple petal.
No. A top-down structure, a central command system, giving system instructions to behave towards a system that is parallel with
Pinkerton.
Oh,
space to live in fear, isn't it? That's what it is to be a slave.
Specific type of security.
I'm Sean Evans, and you're watching Hot Ones. It's the show of hot questions, and even hotter ones.
Really good.
actress and film producer for decades. She's been a Hollywood icon.
Disasters. You have been listening to the Conduction Series. Hosted by WGXC. Upper Hudson Valley, New York.
Taking one last deep breath before you settle. Allowing it to feel natural and easy. Don't try to force the breath or regulate it in any way. Just allow it to flow naturally on its own.
I'm like, all right, everybody, are we letting it flow naturally on its own? That was fun. Thanks for coming, Kyle. Hello, greetings from Boulder. I assume you can hear us. Anna, can you hear me?
Maybe you can hear something?
You can hear us now, hopefully.
Hi, Grant. How you doing?
Ha. Can you doing all right. Well, guess how are you guys doing?
Doing okay. Can you maybe turn up your volume just a little bit?
This is as loud as it goes. We're using a very directional microphone between two people, and only one of us has headphones. So it's a very professional setup here.
Awesome. Well, that sounds good to me.
We can shout into this microphone.
Grant, you're sounding
good
to me.
Can you... Okay, good. So we just have to speak boldly, Kira. Okay. Oh, that's louder. That's pretty loud. Yeah. Okay. So are we Yeah.
That was more to you. I was asking if August and Anna are here. I can see you.
I am most definitely here.
Yes, and I'm here in San Francisco.
Considering what here means.
yeah, exactly. We enjoyed the performance. I was enormously impressed by the way you recovered from the disaster phase one. And moved over onto some other machines.
And, yeah, we had some sort of server issue at the beginning.
Quite a severe one, it seems. We were anyway, it was great. I mean, we really enjoyed it. It built the momentum and sense of accumulation through the piece.
Yeah. I mean, what does Bob Ross say? Happy accidents.
What is Mezcal? What do you hope that Mezcal is and will go on being,
or
better at doing, or be able to do more of?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure. I think I got a lot of layers I'm thinking about what it is and how it operates. I think first and foremost, I think it would be kind of just a cool virtual space and instrument, and maybe even a language that people can meet within and interact with each other and with sound in some way. So just sort of generically and abstractly, I might put it out there on like a more like technical and pragmatic level. I see it as a media instrument or mediumatic space that I'd like to produce and work on and kind of chip away at and improve, where you have different kinds of audio features, where it's automatically connected with people who can just go there without having to like log in and do all kinds of nonsense. So basically an application that would live in the browser, work on your phone, be a kind of, you know, discursive space that you could communicate through on the go.
Yeah, that's so let me ask this just really simple thing. Do you imagine that that the radio session, or if we, I don't know what the term is, for the radio that gets made in the Mezcal space is always public facing.
You know, I don't know. I don't know about that. I could imagine it. I mean, I imagine it's the kind of space that exists when the machines are on. But that doesn't necessarily mean it has to be public. And I think for now, like right now, I've been working real hard on the instrument itself. So like programming it and doing like the, you know, the bare bones kind of stuff. This is like one of the first times, you know, we've been practicing a little bit with this thing, but this is one of the first time that like real artists have come and joined and done something with it. And I mean, I want to leave that open to be decided by, you know, whoever's using it in some way. And maybe that's a little bit of a bummer answer of sorts, but that's kind of the best I got right now.
No, not
if I could add to that, actually.
Yeah, please, Anna, do.
I think what's interesting about these sorts of telematics spaces is that a lot of us are coming from some experience with radio, with terrestrial radio. And there is a similarity here in terms of being able to work with a space that is a transmission space without necessarily being broadly publicized, but can still allow for these sort of alternate little public pockets to form. So I could imagine having this space as a way to create opportunities to improvise with, you know, friends or students or colleagues. But I can also imagine adding an aspect of this to another kind of performance or another kind of live radio. So there's a stable way to involve and sort of overlap spaces. And in that way, the telematic exchange has something that really shares with radio space, because that's also about multiplying places.
Yeah, that I was hoping that was what you might say, that it wasn't a kind of exclusively or even primarily outward looking performance space, but that it was a kind of almost, in some ways, a civic space or a kind of point of a place for kind of convergence in some way to be determined. Which I guess resonates quite a lot for us with what we're trying to do with As If Radio, which is partly about bringing these kind of heterogeneous things that normally exist in separate places, like environmental sounds and live feeds from protests in the streets of Glasgow and roundabout in kind of pub spaces where people are preparing actions and stuff, bringing these together in a kind of a mashup. So I guess we always feel really constrained by being as we are here in a room surrounded with a lot of wires and stuff, and it feels like that's a kind of archaic setup. Not necessarily in a bad way.
But it's only
one piece of a puzzle. So if you're talking about Anna's term transmission ecologies, it's always strange to be in one of these rooms, as we've been now for hours and hours and days and days. So
yeah,
you know, I apologize in advance. Here's another thought.
No, I was just about to say, I think it's been 140 hours. We're at 80 hours now, and that isn't the total counter of time that we've been on air. I was just thinking earlier about how you're talking about space. I think also it seems quite boundaryless, this platform, this space. Like some of the samples you were using were from, you know, games from like 4 or 5 years ago, and just the limitless, the way that people are using this platform, I think because it allows such creativity without that desire or desperate need to be fitting into one specific aesthetic value or idea. I think it's a really powerful tool that you've created.
Well, a lot of people are asking me like what it's for, right? And like I'm always trying to dodge that question because I kind of feel like I would like, you know, it's kind of like asking what a piano is for in a way or something like that. It always feels a little bit awkward because you kind of imagine all these different kinds of things happening. And I could just say like one cool like thing that was done with this summer was some colleagues of mine, Eliseo Ortiz and Jessica Ordez, did a live radio show walking outside the perimeters of detention centers in Otay Mesa, California, and here in Aurora, California, and did a live radio broadcast describing like what's going on, the history of these places. And so, I mean, that sits in pretty high contrast to what I think we ended up doing today, which was more like, I'm not even sure how to describe it. I'm sure Anna has a better term than I do.
Let's say just sort of improvisatory, improvising.
Potluck.
Yeah, improvising on themes, trying to avoid despair.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's a lot of space for all of these things, like playing together. I mean, what's also interesting about this is that in contrast to some of the other forms of, you know, conference software, which are designed to give you the sense of entering a room and interacting with people, that's entirely visual and that only is sort of only optimized for the human voice. Mezcal is really for us to listen to one another, and sounds great, and latency is really low. And so there's a certain sort of immediacy without the visual that is a huge relief for me, at least. I mean, I just find it personally really exhausting to always be on camera or to always have to look at people in this sort of flattened way. And then it's a disappointment for the sound to always be so compromised. So the fact that this is just drawing on different senses that allows you to also be in the world because you're not staring at a screen. Like, you can just put your phone in your pocket while hiking around and making sounds. So there isn't this need to fixate on the device. You can be in the world while also sharing something. So it's a different mode, I think. Like the principles around it are automatically more open to this overlap of worlds while also being in the world and not divorcing yourself from the world by being in thrall of the device.
Maybe that's related to some of the openness that Kira was talking about. It feels you don't have that flat, bounded sense of. I mean, we do that with Reveille broadcasts. So sometimes we use feeds from. A good example would be like we use these feeds from these sort of safari cams, and from Southern Africa. And if you watch them on YouTube or wherever they're hosted, they just look like a safari park. I mean, they look like something that you always already knew and can't really observe. But if you remove the audio, remove the visual from them, they suddenly sound weirdly abstract and open. So maybe the same is true for the kinds of relationships you imagine in a mezcal convo rather than a Zoom.
But I think also it's because you have, well, it's like Anna was saying, it's a totally different mode. Like, there are no preconceptions of what you're about to experience because you have no other contextual clues aside from what other people are feeding you. But what I particularly like about the Mezcal platform that listeners might not be able to see if they're not using it, is your ability to mute certain things and bring certain things back into your own mix. So you still have that element of control in your world that you're creating.
Yeah. Yeah, on my end, I mean, I'm trying to work hard and get some, you know, new features out. I feel like when you add new things or like I was just working on adding access to archive.org sounds, and like as soon as you open up to, you know, the bajillions of audio that they have there, you kind of I don't know, you add a new aesthetic dimension to it. It adds another kind of affordance, and so I don't know, I see this as a 5 or 10 year project that I would like to see grow. I'd like to work with artists who have ideas for how to use it, or, you know, even specific projects. And I don't know, I see myself as like sort of part the artist and part the collaborator in all of this.
Well, I mean, I guess one of the repositories at Archive is all of the field recordings on Radio Arbory, which would be an amazing thing to have access to in terms of, I don't know, more than human sound worlds. When we were making community-based radio, we just realized that how rich that resource is and how free it is, you know, because especially in the time of trying to get a show together, you just don't have time to get clearance from these kind of upscale archives, and you can't afford them anyway. And Apri's there. It's like, it's really unbelievable. So that would be an amazing thing to have.
Yeah, I mean, it's mostly in the bag. I just got to deploy it. And yeah, there's some technical issues I'm trying to work out with their support team.
I can imagine.
And what's really cool, though, as I'm like talking with these different archives, like right now, Mezcal, like one of the, like, the main features is freesound.org, and the other I'm adding is archive.org. Mm. Like, I'm finding like these open archives are super receptive. When you say, hey, I got this, you know, issue, and I would really love to have, you know, your sounds in this cross-origin context in this thing called Mezcal. And they, I don't know. It's just exciting that that kind of free culture exists.
Mm. Yeah,
I think what's also great about it is that...
Sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
No, I was just thinking... get UberWeb as well. Once you've got archive.org, please go ahead.
You know, Uber would be my first, but they unfortunately are like dead set against any API, so we'd have to like scrape it. It'd be a ton of work, but totally worth it, right?
Yeah, okay. Sorry, Anna, I cut you twice by mistake. Please go ahead.
Oh, that's all right. One thing I was also thinking is that, you know, returning to the questions around climate crisis and just how we need to really rethink how we are in the world. Most artists, at least in the last 10, 15 years, need to travel relentlessly if you want to kind of earn a living as an artist. And before I took an academic job, that's what I was doing, was living with no fixed address, actually, for about 2.5 years. And that just obviously is not sustainable at all. And it's not possible for me to even remotely conceive of traveling the way I did in the past. And it doesn't matter that I don't drive a car and that I don't, you know, use a dryer or these other sorts of things. It's like I flew all over the place like a crazy person. And so that just has to stop. And I have to think of other ways to present work and other ways to collaborate with people, other ways to preserve and broaden networks. And so I think all of these sorts of efforts that relate to the local and to the translocal, to quote Tetsuo Kogawa, I think are really useful. And so what I also appreciate about Mezcal is that there's a specificity to what we can share, but there's also a fluidity to it. And I can really imagine it being an easy way to hold a small conference session, for instance, and also be able to interact in ways that are more interesting than simply speaking.
Yeah, you can imagine all the faculty in conference meetings with trumpet sounds in the background or something.
Exactly. Or just like pitching somebody's voice or pitching your own voice, like being able to use the ideas or the sort of principles from sound production to think about communication are really interesting.
Yeah. Well, what do you think about this? So something like occurs to me every now and then when I'm looking at this thing or interacting with people is that in some way it's kind of like the dream of the 90s, right?
This is completely the dream of the night. This is like 1998 all over again, except none of us are chain smoking anymore. So,
so I was just wondering, like, was the dream of the 90s maybe unfulfilled and like maybe I don't know. I'm like the creator of this thing, but is maybe Mezcal? I mean, can we relive that dream? Is like the McLuhan-esque thing of like, you know, electricity crossing borders and uniting the world? Is that too naive?
I mean, hopefully we've also learned a thing or two about, you know, the tech does not determine the full story of its use or its, you know, anything can be, any kind of human technical collaboration can be mutable to the circumstances. Mm. But nonetheless, I think what was interesting is that when we were doing, and August, you and I both had this connection to Kunstradio in Austria, in the late 90s, and mm-hmm. And that's when we started doing these like net jams using radio mm-hmm. stations, and then everybody also receiving each other's feed, but we would only be say two or three partners at a time, maybe four maximum,
right?
But one of the things that we did at that time, because there was so much delay, is that you would always have the feed from everybody would have each other's feed consistently in their mix, and so there would be these weird resonances and echoes and sort of very slow feedback patterns that would build up over time in the circuit. And that's something that was a feature of the slowness of the internet and the kind of limitations of the bandwidth. And now that we're sort of in a more simultaneous space, and there's other things that will become characteristic of how we share. So that strikes me as something that is maybe the updated version.
Yeah.
One thing I would like to say, as someone who's born in the late 90s, I'm from a generation of people who are so burnt out by the internet because we grew up with it, that our entire lives have been sharing and sharing and sharing, and that's what I think what makes this platform feel so current isn't the right word for it, but there's an entire generation of people who are it is that dream of trying to connect, because our entire lives have been this shopfront, right? You have to have an Instagram account and you link to it in your bio and people. So for example, in Oxford, I've started going by another name, but I can't, the world is so public facing and so visual orientated. And so to have a platform like this where people are communicating through non-direct, and also I think a lot of the world's been oversimplified by this hyper-saturated internet life, that to have a platform like this where you can express and communicate not only non-visually but also through more conceptual, like through samples or through I'm trying to find the words for it, but
one thing that I do find interesting about it is like the liveness, the simultaneous. There's no real archive in this thing, at least not yet. And so like, you're not doom scrolling or doing any of the kind of addictive behavior. You really are kind of got to be in the present.
Yeah. And I think also what you pointed to, Kiara, is really important. It's that the ideas of, you know, blurring the boundaries between private and public turned into privatization and publication. And so being able to participate in a space that allows you to be a bit private or mutable if you want to, that isn't immediately broadcasting to the whole world, that isn't being driven by a kind of algorithmic logic, feels like another path not taken, I guess, by the sort of big tech platforms. And I don't know I'm not sure that Mezcal is necessarily something one would want to have turn into an enormous format, but I think it's something that could be really great as a way for more of us to really use creatively. And I guess that's the end of that thought. But it was just this thing about privatization, I feel like, is a real problem, and this sort of publication and surveillance, that's the other side of it. you know, a sort of relentlessness to that. And one has to really opt out as opposed to opt in. And this sort of, again, I feel like what's interesting also about mezcal is that there's this nice potential for specificity, even though there's also this feeling that we're in a pretty, you know, a space that it's difficult to completely know its full dimensions.
Regarding like the private public, I think maybe one thing that, and Kiara, you've been in this discussion, I think a little bit with our beta group, was like whether we should have like enforced logins and authentication and all that stuff. And like the model I have in my head is more like IRC, which is even pre-90s technology, where you kind of just call everyone, kind of assume these identities, give themselves a name, and you didn't have to like, you didn't have your pictures or anything. It was a text interface. And so lacking the visual part of it and lacking the kind of, what do they call that in Facebook, where you have to prove your identity proof or whatnot. I think there's something liberating about that. I don't know. I don't know if it's the right model to use, but I think that's what I have in my head now.
I mean, it's interesting that we're talking about this public-private debate whilst we're broadcasting to Waveform, which could be listened to by however many unknown people. I think it's just an odd situation.
Yeah, I was... I kind of feel instinctively there's something interesting about this stance. It's not really a stance. It's a kind of it's doing something with other people for yourselves, but half facing out. And I guess we've been thinking quite a lot about small scale protest as an alternative to these kind of conventional protests, which creates masses of people that then sort of address something to an authority. And we were quite captivated by a performance that made its way to the streets of Glasgow at night last week, doing just kind of small, slightly anarchic sort of activations of the space with kind of bits of comedy and sort of slapstick and messing around in various ways that we played out over the radio through a live stream. Someone followed them through the streets, and it felt really kind of opening onto something through its indeterminacy in a way that is not the case when we also stream the kind of organized rally thing. So I also feel like I don't know, I keep using this term, the school of public life, which is Fred Dewey's term, but I sort of feel like there's something useful about this, about these small scale assemblies that also turn towards the public. You know, like this is a very small assembly, but I don't feel that the publication of it is really inhibiting, or I don't feel like it damages the possibilities for communication or making something.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we do now have to move on to another piece here, but this has been an excellent conversation, I think, about a very interesting platform and space. If there are people listening who are interested but perhaps can't be part of the beta group, is there some way that they can follow along with the progress of this?
I think the best place would be maybe the first place would be my website, which is just august.black. And then the other, I should also say that a good portion of this application is supported by wavefarm.org. And so they could also look there for upcoming updates. And I should maybe also mention that this conduction series that we've just started, this was the very first one of the series we will be doing monthly from here on out on the first Friday at this time.
Very nice.
Thanks so much for having us.
Would you like
to... I don't know that I have anything more to plug there. I think August has provided all the good points. Keep tuning in to those who are listening, and we will be as well.
Great. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.